Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right is the vivacious and very bubbly Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Oh, a new word, Carl. Thanks.
Bubbly.
I like it. Nice.
Yeah.
Did you work hard on that word?
Looked it up in the dictionary.
Good one.
Program 285 in the series. It's May 20th. It's a Sunday night. In the booth is Shantae Garth, our producer, and in the studio, our executive producer, Mike Gastella. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how's it going?
I'm good. Hey, good to see you, my friend. All right, well, you know what? We have classic radio shows for our listeners all the way until 2 a.m. Tonight, or actually this morning. I was a communist for the FBI. Don't turn me in, Lisa.
I wouldn't do that to you.
Don't call the government on me.
Never.
And then it's the Jack Benny program, and then a good mystery on the sealed book. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride. We're going to play our game, Cat's Pride. Crack the quote. What's the movie, Lisa?
Some Like It Hot, Carl.
Some Like It Hot. Marilyn Monroe.
Yep, 1959.
Yeah, very good movie. And we'll take what? The eighth caller. What do they win?
I was going to say eight also.
Wow.
A desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. You know who else is in that movie? Jamie Curtis's dad.
Oh.
Yeah.
Great.
You know who that is?
Who?
Tony Curtis.
Oh, Tony Curtis.
Yeah, he's in that movie. All right. Give us a call. It's Some Like It Hot. We'll play the game after these words.
It's time now for Crack the Quote.
Another buck.
Brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Roger, you look pretty spiffy in your green shirt.
Well, it looks like Kermit the Frog up there.
No, I think you're looking great. Anyways,
a human Kermit.
We have Claudia on the phone. Hi, Claudia.
Yes, hello.
Hi, great to hear you.
Yes, good to talk to you guys.
Good, thank you. Glad you called in. We're going to do a little Crack the Quote. You ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right, we're going to have Carl and Roger help you out, although I don't know how much help that is, but we'll see how it goes. Okay, number one, if you feel like you're coming down with something, my dear, the best thing in the world is a shot of whiskey. Number two, you'll be my glass of wine, I'll be your shot of whiskey, honey. Number three, too much good whiskey is barely enough, my sweet.
Hmm. What do you think, Claudia?
I think I got this.
Okay, Roger, spit it out.
Let's let Claudia go first.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ladies first.
All right, I thought I was running the show here, but clearly I am not.
This is right. Clearly you are not.
I get no deference here. What do you think, Claudia?
That's a hard one.
I know.
I'll go with the number one.
Like number one, if you feel like you're coming down with something, my dear, the best thing in the world is a shot of whiskey.
We're all going to be picking one because Roger's
like that,
shaking
Roger?
His head.
Yeah, because they're on the boat.
What do you think, Carl?
I'm numero uno.
All right, let's hear it, Shantae.
If you feel that you're coming down with something, my dear, the best thing in the world is a shot of whiskey.
All right, ding, ding, ding.
Hang
for
on.
All of you. I did it for you already. Carl, you're a little slow. Well, congratulations, Claudia. You won. Either way, you're a winner. We would love to send you a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. The 60-Minute Man. Call 855-955-HVAC. Those are really cool. I hope you enjoy that.
I will. Thank you. I enjoy your show very much.
Thank you. So glad
Claudia,
you're listening with us tonight.
She's a big winner. She knew that it was number one. We all did.
We all did.
Even Kermit up there knew it was number one. Right?
Even Roger. Clearly that one was very easy.
Kermit even knew they were on a boat.
Yeah, that's true.
He did. It's a great movie. If you haven't seen Some Like It Hot, that is a movie. Definitely.
Sounds like something you'd like,
Carl. I love it. Great movie. All right, you know what else is great?
I guess I do.
I was a communist for the FBI. This was a spy series that starred Dana Andrews as Matt Savetic. Now, Savetic infiltrated the Communist Party in the U.S. and reported every move back to the FBI for 9 years. This is true. This guy really did this. He was a double agent for us. And there was a radio series that really documented his exploits. It aired from 1952 until 1954 during the height of the anti-communist frenzy sweeping the USA. Tension-filled stories with Savetic constantly in risk of his life if the commies learned his true motives. And Frank Lovejoy starred in a 1951 film, which spawned the radio series starring Dana Andrews. And we have an episode for you now from January 4th, 1953. This is called A Study in Oils, part one now of I Was a Communist for the FBI.
FBI number 41.
I was a communist for the FBI. Starring Dana Andrews and an exciting tale of danger and espionage. I was a communist for the FBI. From the actual records and authentic experiences of Matt Savetic come many of the incidents in this unusual story. Here is our star, Dana Andrews, as Matt Savetic, who for 9 fantastic years lived as a communist for the FBI.
9 years is a long time to live behind an iron curtain, even a self-imposed iron curtain. And it's particularly distressing because we, who have stepped behind that curtain, can still see through it. We know the way you are living, natural, normal, happy lives. We know, too, the way you look down on us, despising us as traitors. But though we understand, it hurts because everyone has a craving for love, for admiration, essentials of living that are denied to the unknown communist for the FBI.
Now, here is Dana Andrews as Matt Savetic, undercover man. This story from the confidential file is marked A Study in Oils.
As I walk into Comrade Horsting's house, I know again that feeling of apprehension that accompanies every special party summons. As always, I wonder why I've been called. Have they seen me making a contact with the FBI? Or have they finally been able to fix the failure of some party project on me? It hasn't happened so far, but it can at any time. And the worry is always there. Then, in Comrade Horsting's living room, I learn that they haven't caught me yet.
You have been chosen to perform a very important mission, Comrade Svetik. Mission which has already met with several reverses.
Then what makes you think I can swing it?
What I think has no bearing on the case. The assignment came from party headquarters.
Oh, what is it?
You are to effect a friendly acquaintance with a Mr. and Mrs. Walt Wheeler.
Where do I meet them?
On the New York Bound Limited, which passes through here at 8 o'clock tonight.
How will I know them?
I have pictures on them. Newspaper pictures taken when the Wheelers overnight were catapulted from poverty to tremendous wealth.
Oil?
5 wells so far, flowing 37,000 barrels a day. And according to my reports, this is only the beginning.
And the party wants some of this oil money?
Naturally.
Oh, I see.
Your job is simply to effect a friendly meeting with them. A meeting which can be exploited after you arrive in New York.
I leave at 8 o'clock tonight?
Right. The Wheelers, according to the report given me, will be in drawing room B, car 7018.
After leaving Comrade Horsting to go home and pack for my trip to New York, I step into a phone booth and call the FBI. I report to the agent in charge and ask for instructions. But he can't give me any until we know more about the project. Instead, he tells me to contact the bureau office in New York as soon as I learn something definite. I've only been in my room a few minutes, packing for my trip, when events began to catch up with me.
You take your time, Comrade Svetik.
I wasn't expecting you, Comrade Horsting. Come in. Has my trip to New York been canceled?
No. In fact, your responsibilities have increased. I just received this package, which you are to deliver to Comrade Crowder at party headquarters.
What is it?
I wasn't told, Comrade Svetik. And I didn't ask.
Well, I just wondered. A large, flat package like that.
If Comrade Crowder thinks you should know, he'll tell you. After you deliver the package. Now, finish your packing. We'll have dinner together. And then I'll drive you to the station.
I'm curious to know what's in the package Comrade Horsting has given me, but I can't look at it while he's around, and he doesn't leave me alone for a second. During dinner, he gives me his newspaper pictures of the Wheelers, and I memorize them. After dinner, he drives me to the station, where I pick up a copy of Petroleum News, a trade paper of the oil industry, before boarding my train. The first thing I do after the train leaves the station is to open the package I'm to deliver to Comrade Crowder at party headquarters. I'm not prepared for what I see. It's an oil painting of a boy dressed in the period known as the Renaissance. And it's signed Rembrandt. Communists and Rembrandt don't go together, naturally. So I decide to phone from the first scheduled stop to ask the FBI to inspect the painting at Grand Central Station in New York. Then I take my Petroleum News and walk toward the club car, where a man I recognize as the man in my newspaper pictures, Walt Wheeler, is staring out the window. I sit down beside him and begin reading my oil industry paper. It's fate well cast, and Wheeler opens the conversation.
You an oil business, mister?
No, not really. I just like to read about it and hope that the leases I hold on government land may be worth something someday.
Well, it could happen.
Sure, but not to me.
It happened to me, mister.
You're joking.
Not a smidgen, mister. I was stuck with 250 of the most worthless, no-account acres a man ever broke a plow point on.
That's where they struck the oil?
Yes, sir.
Well, imagine that. What's your name?
Wheeler. Walt Wheeler.
Wheeler?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I read something about you in this magazine a month or so back.
You might have. We sure had a flock of people after us. Taking pictures and writing articles, trying to sell us things we never even heard of.
Yeah, I'll bet.
I didn't catch your name.
Oh, it's Smith, Matt Smith.
Oh, I'm glad to know you, Mr. Smith.
Well, I'm certainly glad to know you, Mr. Wheeler.
Well, you just call me Walt.
Thanks, Walt.
You know, I haven't dared say that to anybody since we struck the darned oil. Found too many people ready to take advantage.
There are those people.
Yes, sir, and Min and me met most of them. Min's my wife.
I'd like to meet her.
I'd like to have you meet her. Right now, she's back in the drawing room, primping.
Just like a woman, huh?
She's entitled to it. If Min wants to spend the rest of her life primping, it's all right with me. She's had it tough enough before.
Things were pretty bad before you struck the oil, huh?
It couldn't have been much worse. I suppose that's why the communists tried to move in on us.
What was that about communists?
Well, sir, as soon as we struck oil, we was approached to join the Communist Party and... Well, can you imagine me having anything to do with a red?
An oil millionaire like you. No, Walt, I can't.
Oil millionaire be darned. Even when we was poor, I was an American. I never believed that there was any place in America for red communism.
I'm glad to hear you say that, Walt. I hate them, too.
Well, men ought to be through with their fixing by now. Let's go back and see.
Well, I'll be glad to after we leave this next stop. I have to get off the train and make a call to New York.
It must be pretty important business if you can wait till you get there.
It is important.
Well, I'll wait here till you get back on the train. Then we'll go see Min.
While they're switching engines, I get off the train and call the FBI in New York and arrange to have an agent meet me at Grand Central Station and check on the Rembrandt I'm carrying. Then I meet Walt Wheeler's wife, Min. She's about 50, and the years of poverty have left their marks. Marks that their newfound fortune can dim, but never erase.
This trip to New York is the first real shopping trip I've ever taken in my whole life, Mr. Smith. I'm going to make it a good one.
What are you going to buy first, Mrs. Wheeler?
I don't know exactly. I only know it's going to be the most expensive thing I can carry. Walt promised me that.
I meant it, too, honey. There's nothing too good for my men.
It'd be fun to go shopping with you, even though I couldn't buy anything.
Well, why don't you come on with us?
Well, I'd like to.
You've been around a lot more than we have. We could sort of lean on you for advice.
I have a little business I have to take care of first.
We got all the time in the world, Mr. Smith.
Then we'll get together in New York sometime tomorrow. Where'll you be staying?
Well, we got reservations at the Towers.
You're really living like oil millionaires, aren't you?
The sky's the limit this trip, Mr. Smith.
I'm not sure that I can stand the altitude, but I'll certainly enjoy the ride. When the Wheelers and I get off the train in Grand Central Station, I know that I've established a contact with them that fits my party orders, a contact that can be exploited to the party's advantage. After we part, I try to figure out what the angle is going to be. Then suddenly, shockingly, the Wheelers are erased from my mind by the sight of a man walking toward me, a man with his arms folded, a signal that he's an FBI agent that I'm to meet and show the Rembrandt. I nod and start toward him. He smiles. Then when I'm only 3 paces away, his smile changes to a frown, and he turns his back as a voice says to me,
Mr. Svedek?
What?
Are you Matthew Svedek?
Yes.
I'm Comrade Crowder. I believe you have a package for me.
Yes. But I was supposed to deliver it to party headquarters.
You were supposed to deliver it to me. May I have it, please?
It's in my bag.
Oh. In that case, keep it there until we reach headquarters. Were you successful in contacting the Wheelers?
Yes.
Good.
How are we going to exploit them?
That will be explained at headquarters. Come on.
All right. Ooh, some dramatic music there. And I was a communist for the FBI. This is called A Study in Oils from January 4th, 1953. Dana Andrews as the star of that program. Very good, sort of a spy intrigue show. It was on the air a couple of years back in the 1950s. We're going to have more of it after these words. All right, after the news, we will get back to I Was a Communist for the FBI, starring Dana Andrews. After that, it's the Jack Benny program from 1948. Jack has dinner with the Colemans, Ronald and Benita Coleman. A lot of fun on that broadcast. Then it's A Good Mystery on the Sealed Book with Philip Clark. Lisa's a mystery, too. She's a big mystery.
I think all women are a mystery to
That's
you,
true.
Carl.
They're a big mystery, all right. And then we have Kermit the Frog up there to do the news. How you doing, Kermit? How's it going? Roger,
go
Kermit.
From mysterious women to Kermit the Frog.
Yeah, Roger, Kermit,
one
Baddish. The news, the 11:30 news, is sponsored by Ishnala Supper Club, and we're all going to go there, right, Roger?
Of course.
All of us will get Lisa's limo. Mm-hmm. She has a... No. We have
if
the,
I drive there, will you pay?
No, use the limo.
Let's
use
I mean, if I
limo.
Get us there, will you pay?
I'll
for
pay.
What, the
I'll
dinner?
Pay for dinner.
Yeah, for dinner. Carl will pay.
Okay.
I'll treat.
Okay.
You get the limo.
I've never been there.
Pick Roger up first, then come pick me up.
Well, wait, she'd have to come all
I'm
the way back.
That's right.
Back
I want it
up.
To cost her more money.
Oh, I got
I want
you.
It
okay.
to be. I want it to be very inconvenient for her.
Oh,
since
you
I'm
are
paying.
Inconvenient.
So,
wow.
But let's go to Ishnala. I hear it's fantastic.
Let's do it. We can't go without Dave Plyer. Like, he
we'll
is like
Dave.
Mr. Ishnala.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Esmeralda. And thank you, Bill Curtis. We're here every Saturday and Sunday night bringing you the best in classic radio from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. And we are listening to I Was a Communist for the FBI, Dana Andrews starring. Here's the conclusion.
I didn't want to talk in the station or the cab, Comrade Svedek, but the party is going to sell the Wheelers the contents of the package you brought to me.
How can we be sure that they'll buy?
That is your assignment, comrade.
Oh? And what am I supposed to sell them?
Open your grip and take out the package.
Here.
Thank you. There you are.
An oil painting. Signed by Rembrandt.
Do you think that you can sell that to the Wheelers?
Possibly. Though I doubt that they've ever heard of him.
That doesn't matter. We have to sell it to them.
Why to the Wheelers? The Rembrandt should be worth a lot of anybody's money.
There are several advantages in selling to the Wheelers, comrade. In the first place, they have almost unlimited financial resources, newly acquired.
Is that a particular advantage?
Certainly. Once we have their money, their check for this picture, we'll have the check photostated on both sides. And the endorsement will be made in the name of the Communist Party.
Then we'll claim that the money was intended as a contribution to the party and can blackmail them indefinitely.
Exactly. With your help, Comrade Svetik, we'll convert the Wheelers' money to the party. Every dollar of it.
Now that I know the party's plan to sell the Wheelers an oil by Rembrandt, I'm anxious to get away to report to the FBI so that Walton men can be warned against buying any painting. But I can't get away. Instead, with Comrade Crowder, I enter an inner office.
Shut the door, Comrade Svetik.
What is he doing here, comrade?
He has clients for our Rembrandt, Dr. Brokaw.
Oh? Well, in that case, welcome, Comrade
Svetik, Doctor.
Comrade Svetik?
This is Dr. Sergei Brokaw, comrade. Dr. Brokaw is an art dealer, critic, and expert.
And party member?
But of course, comrade. My Avant art gallery is simply a necessary front.
After several others have failed, Comrade Svetik finally scraped up an acquaintance with a pair of dupes. Party has been most anxious to capture, Doctor.
Oh.
Peasants with oil wells.
Oh, they should be very good prospects.
Frankly, I doubt if they've ever heard of Rembrandt, Doctor.
So much the better, comrade. They'll not be so critical. Our artist, while improving, is not yet perfect.
I'm afraid I don't follow you.
For example, on this portrait of an unknown boy that was just delivered to us...
Comrade Svetik also delivered the painting, Doctor.
No matter who delivered it, our artist is improving. Except for the subject's left eye being 1 centimeter too short in this...
Forgery?
Copy is a kinder word, comrade. Except for that one small difference, and that would not be noticed by any except the most thorough investigators, I defy anyone to prove that this is not a genuine Rembrandt. The colors, the canvas, the frame, everything is a copy of the finest order.
If you don't mind, Doctor, I'd just as soon you saved the sales talk for these suckers of Comrade Svetik. He and I need to work out a plan for catching them.
Crowder has a plan all worked out without any help from me. A con game that would catch people a lot more sophisticated than the Wheelers. There's nothing I can do to warn them. But I do get one break. While Crowder's checking in at the Wheelers Hotel as part of the trap, I get a chance to get to a phone booth and call the FBI.
Murray Hill office.
I called you long distance from a railroad junction last night.
Possibly smuggled a stolen Rembrandt for us, reported an interception. Where are you now?
I'm in a phone booth. That picture wasn't either smuggled or stolen.
Sure?
I'm positive. It was forged. Canvas, frame, everything.
Describe the picture.
Well, Dr. Sergei Brokaw called it Portrait of an Unknown Boy. It's a canvas about 14 by 16 inches. According to Brokaw, the art critic and a party member, the boy's left eye is 1 centimeter shorter in this forgery than it is in the original.
Well, that'll help plenty. Good work.
Well, that isn't all. They're getting set to sell this phony painting to some brand new millionaires, people named Wheeler. They're stopping at the Towers. Mr. and Mrs. Walt Wheeler.
Uh-huh. Anything more?
Yeah. Call the Wheelers and tell them that they're going to be shown a phony painting and warn them not to buy it.
Well, I'm sorry, but I can't do that.
But look, the Reds plan to hook them. Then blackmail them. This is only the first step.
Well, I can't warn them, and don't you warn them either.
But look...
I'm sorry, I have another call waiting. I'll explain it to you later. Bye.
I can't understand the agent's attitude. I'm risking my neck to make this report. To keep the Reds from getting their hands on the Wheelers' money, and I'm told to forget it. My hands are tied. I know, we're fighting a war against communism, and in any war, people get hurt. But I still feel like a traitor when I go to Comrade Crowder's room at the hotel, call the Wheelers, and get them to come down to see the Rembrandt. Oh, come in, man. Walt. I want you to meet a friend of mine.
Well, any friend of yours is a friend of ours, Matt.
Thanks, Walt. Well, Mrs. Wheeler, I'd like you to meet Mr. Crowder. Mr. Wheeler, Mr. Crowder.
Hi. Nice to know you.
What's this picture you were talking about, Matt?
It belongs to Mr. Crowder. It's called Portrait of an Unknown Boy.
It's a painting by Rembrandt. Little known and extremely valuable.
When Mr. Crowder said that he intended selling the picture, men, I remembered your saying that you wanted to buy the most expensive thing you could carry. This picture might be it.
You remembered that and thought of it.
I told you he was real folks, men.
There's considerable prestige connected with owning a genuine Rembrandt.
Oh, is he one of them moderns?
Rembrandt has been dead more than 200 years.
Oh.
He was one of the old masters.
Oh, then this is real expensive.
Extremely. It's probably worth much more than you could possibly pay.
How much is it worth?
Maybe 50,000. Possibly 150,000.
Well, now that's quite a spread. How do you find out for certain?
Check some professional art dealer.
Who?
Your own, if you like.
Oh, we don't have an art dealer.
I didn't think you would. I don't know why you insisted on wasting my time, Matt.
You're not wasting your time, Mr. Crowder. I'll vouch for the Wheelers. If they decide to buy your painting, they can well afford to buy it.
And any other painting you happen to have, too.
Why don't we take this picture to an art gallery and get an unbiased appraisal of it?
Well, anything you say, Matt. Where's a good one?
I'll pick one out of the phone book. Here we are. The Avant Art Gallery. Dr. Sergei Brokoff, art dealer, critic, and expert.
Well, get the picture and let's go. We'll show Mr. Crowder who can or can't buy a painting.
I am terribly busy at the moment, Mr. Smith. I have an appraisal to do at the Metropolitan Museum, a showing to Mr. Rockingham, a restoration of an early Goya.
Yeah, if he's that busy, Matt, let's try somebody else.
Just a second, Mr.
Wheeler, Walt Wheeler.
I didn't refuse to look at your painting.
Well, it isn't ours yet. May not be.
I was simply reminding myself of the number of important tasks confronting me.
Will you appraise this picture, Dr. Brokoff, or won't you?
I'll be very happy to, Mr. Smith. Please, bring it into this next room and set it up on the easel.
Thank you.
You sure know how to handle these big shots, Matt.
There's no point in wasting time if he doesn't want the job. Well, excuse me while I help Mr. Crowder with the picture and the easel.
Well, what do you think, men?
It'd sure make their eyes pop out back home.
Yeah, that's for sure, but maybe $150,000.
I would never pay that, Walt.
Mr. and Mrs. Wheeler.
Coming.
I want to thank you for bringing this work to me.
Well, I thought you had more than you could handle.
I was referring to the painting. You've permitted me to make a discovery which will be remembered long after I'm forgotten.
Yeah?
You're to be congratulated, Mr. Wheeler. Is the painting for sale?
Well, I don't own it. It belongs to Mr. Crowder there.
Oh? Oh, well, pardon me. Is the painting for sale, Mr. Crowder?
It is, if the price is right.
Would you accept $100,000?
Cash?
Well, it would take me a little time to get in touch with my principal.
Hey, now, we brought that picture in here.
You don't own it, Mr. Wheeler. It may take me a few days to get in touch with my client, Mr. Crowder, but I can assure you that he'll be more than willing to pay $100,000 for this painting. Now, if you will accept my check for $10,000 as evidence of good faith, Mr. Crowder...
We're buying that picture, Mr. Crowder.
Oh, now, see here, Mr. Wheeler.
If your client can pay $100,000 for that thing, Min and me can, too. And we'll give you a check for the whole thing right now, Mr. Crowder.
Well,
Talk to him, Matt. I didn't know it before, but I do now. I got to have that picture.
I know now why gamblers say only suckers can't wait. Min and Walt Wheeler were so afraid that Brokoff's non-existent client would buy the phony Rembrandt, they couldn't take time to think it over. And Brokoff and Crowder played them that way. And the Wheelers actually thanked them when they took the check. A little bitterly, I phoned the FBI and reported that their refusal to warn the Wheelers had given the Reds a present of several million dollars. I left for home that night, and it was 2 days before I again checked with the FBI and arranged a meeting.
Ah, hello, man. Sit down.
Thanks.
Well, feel proud of yourself?
Sure.
I don't blame you.
What are you talking about?
The Wheelers and the phony Rembrandt. You really worked a deal there.
Yeah, quite a deal.
The phony art dealer and Comrade Crowder are going to get about 10 years apiece.
What happened?
When the story of the Wheelers' purchase broke in the papers, every art expert in New York wanted to see their unknown Rembrandt.
I can imagine.
Now, you can't imagine the trouble we were in. Half of the experts thought the painting was authentic. In fact, if it hadn't been for your tip about the left eye being 1 centimeter shorter than the original, we'd never have been able to prove fraud against Brokoff and Crowder.
The Reds still got Wheeler's 100,000.
Well, we wanted them to, Matt. That's why you weren't allowed to tip them off. Once Crowder deposited that check, we had them. It was never cashed because the Bureau put a hold on it until the Wheelers actually stopped payment.
Well, that makes me feel a lot better.
I thought it would. All in all, it was quite a study in oils.
Yeah, a study in oils. Oil wells, oil paintings, and communist oil. My cell leader praised me highly for having handled myself with such circumspection that the suckers, as he called them, never suspected me. And the other members of our cell echoed his praise. For no wholehearted believer in the communist doctrine could ever understand that the Wheelers' attitude toward me stemmed from their own kind, generous, and just basically decent instincts, rather than from any cleverness on my part. I understood, though, and I've often wished that I could see them again as a friend. Naturally, that was impossible. If I am to have friends, I have to pick them from among the members of the Communist Party. I choose to walk alone. Dana Andrews. All over America and in all walks of life, men and women are belatedly learning that they've been duped by the Communist Party, tricked into contributing their names or their time or their money to a group whose only aim is their enslavement. Although to protect innocent persons, names, dates, and places are fictitious, the danger they warn against is very real. Many of these stories are based on the fantastic experiences of Matt Savedic. Next week, we'll bring you another strange adventure. Join us then, won't you?
There you have it. I was a communist for the FBI, a study in oils, January 4th, 1953, with Dana Andrews. That was Truman Bradley doing the announcing on that program, and good show. Mike, great job on that. And you're heading out? Mike Estella, yes. Our executive producer, is off. Back
well,
to his
you
studio.
You just gave me 200 files to work
yeah,
on.
Yeah, 200
so,
more files.
You know.
You can do it, buddy. All right,
you
well,
got
we'll
about 5 minutes. Hurry up.
Yeah, get going on that.
Carl will be texting you in like 5 minutes.
Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, Lisa, we're back. And this is the first hour is almost gone already, Lisa.
Yeah, but we have two more great hours
know,
to go.
But you know what? It's
what,
like
Carl?
The happiest time of my week.
That's
when
just because you get to hang with me.
This is true. On the air here, broadcasting these classic radio shows.
And hang with me.
For an audience almost coast to coast, really, because yeah. It's about 40-plus states.
That's the good part of
working
at night.
Pick up the signal. Yeah. And then even parts of Canada hear this great signal, this 50,000-watt WGN radio signal. We're broadcasting from the Showcase studio. Not much longer, though. We're moving over to 303 East Wacker?
Yep.
303, pretty good, huh, Lisa?
Yeah,
are you impressed?
Yes, I am.
303 East Wacker, we're moving. We're not going to be in the Tribune Tower anymore.
Not much longer.
By about mid-June, maybe, huh?
Yeah, first or second week.
Maybe another 4 or 5 weeks here, tops.
Not even.
Probably not even. Wow.
Although we may not let you know
exactly
the date.
We'll end up over there.
You guys will be over there.
And I'll be like, wow, where's the microphone?
He'll be pounding on the window downstairs.
I know. He's going to be one of those people walking by the Showcase studio banging on the window.
Here. There'll be no microphone, no board, no producer.
And I'm changing my number.
I think we might be over there before you guys.
I think you are. Yeah. I think Todd said we'll be be the last to move.
You'll
Carl will be the last one.
Yeah. Very last. August.
Exactly.
August.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger. Thanks, you, Esmeralda. It is 6 minutes after midnight. It is hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. We'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning. And then Nick DiGilio will be here. We'll chat with him for a little while. But before that, we have the Jack Benny program and then the sealed book. We're also going to play our game, Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote 2 times. And let's play it right now. What's the movie, Lisa?
The movie is The Third Man.
Oh, the Orson Welles, Joseph Cotten film.
I knew you'd like that one.
Excellent film.
Good, 1949.
Good noir film. Yeah, very cool. All right, so what do they win?
They are going to win a Twilight Zone. It's a 4-CD set.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Play the game with us. We'll take caller 5 here. Play Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
And we have Joe on the line. Hi, Joe.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening. We're so glad you're on the phone. We're happy to play the game with you.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, I guess I should say good morning.
Good morning. This is true.
It feels like night, but it really is morning. All right, we're going to do this. You ready, Roger?
I'm born ready.
Okay, here we go. Number one, poor guy. He has no money, no resources, no hopes. I wasn't talking about Carl, I promise. Number two, the surest way to remain poor is to be an honest man. Number three, there he was, poor chap, happy as a lark and without a cent.
Ooh.
What do you think?
Joe gets to go first.
Oh, I'm leaning towards three.
There he was, poor chap, happy as a lark and without a cent. You like that one, Carl?
Yeah, actually,
you like
I do.
That, Roger?
It's either two or three, but I'm going to say three.
I'll go with the two.
Oh, he wants, to be different.
Oh, yeah. He's different. Okay.
Kermit wants to be different.
He's different. Okay, Shante.
There he was, poor chap, happy as a lark and without a cent.
Sometimes different isn't good.
I believe that I am 2 for 2 tonight.
But Joe is the winner here. And Joe, we're so happy to send you a Twilight Zone. It's a 4-CD set hosted by Stacey Keach. Hours and hours of enjoyment. So we hope you appreciate that.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
We appreciate you for calling in.
All right. I tell you, our listeners are smart. They get these. You can't stump our listeners, Lisa.
Well, now and then
actually. Smartest listeners.
The good thing about this is it doesn't matter. We're all playing for fun here.
Yes, it is for fun.
It's all good.
Absolutely. And you know what, folks? If you want to text us, we love getting your texts.
I am reading everything.
Gives Lisa something to do.
I can't answer all of them, but I promise you I am reading
everything. Because I'm working the board here. You're putting the commercials on. I'm playing the shows.
He's sleeping.
I'm talking into the microphone.
And snoring.
I'm handing the mics and on and off.
Drooling.
He's radioing.
He's drooling.
And Lisa just sits there with her hands folded. So she needs something to do.
Oh, it's cold, isn't it?
Yeah, so please
text
us.
We're comfortable.
312-981-7200. That's our text in line. Okay, it's time now for a good Jack Benny program. Oh, I love Jack Benny. Everybody loves Jack Benny.
I do, too.
October 24th, 1948 was the original broadcast date of this. Mary Livingston reads a letter from Mama on the show, and then Jack hears this yodeling echo on the show. It's very funny. And he has guests Ronald Coleman and his real-life wife, Benita Hume, over to Jack's house for dinner. And our fun fact this week was about the fact that Ronald and Benita Coleman did not, in true life, live next door to Jack Benny in Beverly Hills. He lived way across town. They lived way across town. But Jack, on his radio and television show, always sort of purported that they were his neighbors.
Right.
And there was all these fun things all the time. Jack would borrow things from the Colemans. So you're going to hear a little of that. It's very, very funny. Let's tune this in. Part one now of the Jack Benny program.
The Jack Benny Program. The program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to take you out to Jack Benny's home in Beverly Hills. At the moment, Rochester is busy in the kitchen while Jack is in the other room polishing the silver.
Phew. Oh, boy, what a job. Oh, well, there are only four pieces left. Three dimes and a quarter. Gosh, look how they shine. They were green when I took them out of my pocket. I'll never wait that long again. Quiet, Polly. And remember, Polly, now Daddy's giving a very important dinner party tonight. So remember what I taught you. How do you do, Mr. Coleman?
How do you do, Mr. Coleman?
That's right. How do you do, Mrs. Coleman?
Hiya, Toots.
Polly, I wish you'd pay more attention.
Oh, boss!
Yes, Rochester?
What time are Mr. and Mrs. Coleman coming over for dinner?
Oh, they'll be here about 7:30.
Good! That'll give me time to fix some hors d'oeuvres.
Oh, yes. What are we going to have, Rochester?
Cheese and crackers, anchovies, and sardines.
No hard-boiled egg?
No, Polly didn't come through this week.
Oh, she didn't, eh? Rochester, hand me that Halloween mask.
Here you are.
Polly.
Boo!
Oh, my goodness. Look, Rochester, the egg broke.
You sure scared her, boss. It's a double yolker.
Yeah. Yeah, two yolks.
My son, my son.
It'll be all right, Polly. You're young yet. You'll have more. Rochester, you fix the hors d'oeuvres. I'll go out in the yard and pick some flowers for the table.
You sigh, the song begins. Just speak, I'll play my violin. It's magic. The stars desert the sky. It happens even in Van Nuys. It's magic.
See, look at that backyard. Everything's growing so nicely. I wish I were a little luckier, though. Tomatoes go to 60 cents a pound, and I'm stuck with an acre of beans. Oh, well. Last spring, I made money on my pigs. See, what kind of flowers should I get for the table? I think I'll take some of these bluebells. They match my eyes. Now, Ronnie's my guest. I'll pick gardenias. They kind of match his hair. I think I'll take some of these roses, too. There. That ought to be enough.
You sigh, the song begins, and then I play my violin. It's lousy. La, 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 la.
Oh, Rochester. Rochester, get me a vase for these flowers.
Yes, sir. And say, boss, while you're out, Polly laid another egg.
Another egg?
Yeah, she said it was a repeat for the West Coast.
What?
She was holding it for release at this more convenient time.
Rochester, stop being so silly and start setting the table.
Okay. Oh, boss.
What?
Are we going to use napkins, or shall I put on a long tablecloth?
We'll use napkins tonight. What about those on the buffet?
The man brought those this afternoon.
Wait a minute. These are funny-looking napkins.
That's what I thought, so I asked the man to leave his phone number. Here it is.
Good. I'll call him up. Never seen napkins like these before.
Hello, Naps Diaper Service.
Say, this is Jack Benny. Did you leave some napkins for me?
Sorry, wrong number.
Well, Rochester, do the best you can with them, will you? Come in. Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello, Jack. I came over since I could.
Oh, did you stop by the market and get those things I asked you?
Yeah, but tomatoes were 60 cents a pound, so I bought beans.
Beans? Now, I got a backyard full of them. I supply the market. I could have bought those beans for myself and cut out the middleman. Heavens to Boston.
All right, so I made a mistake. Put me in iron.
Mary, it isn't that. But...
Oh, hello, Polly. Polly want a cracker?
Polly want a Rye Crisp.
A Rye Crisp?
She's on a diet.
Oh.
Mary, would you like to... Mary, what are you laughing at?
Oh, Polly being on a diet reminded me of something Mama wrote me in her letter.
Oh, you got a letter from your mother?
Would you like to hear?
Yes. What does Plainfield's answer to Halloween have to say?
Well, just a second. I'll read it to you.
Okay.
My darling son, Mary.
Son?
Mama wanted a boy.
Oh.
Mary, dear, we're all feeling well and hope you are the same. First of all, I want to tell you that your cousin Louie went on a diet and lost a lot of weight. It's a very strict diet. For 30 days, they wouldn't let him have anything but bread and water.
Your mother will say anything for a laugh.
And, Mary, it was awfully sweet of you to send your sister Babe that French bathing suit from Paris. However, Babe tried the bathing suit on yesterday, and something's wrong. Either the manufacturer left something off the suit, or nature left something off Babe.
I knew she couldn't do it.
I'm inclined to think it's her fault, as she hasn't much of a figure. Babe is so bow-legged, she can wear two different stockings and you never notice it.
You know, Babe has such a peculiar leg. When she walks down the street, she looks like she's kicking herself for betting on UCLA.
Jack, there's more.
Oh.
Mary, you remember your Uncle Oliver. Well, Oliver got himself a job in the local bakery as a pretzel bender. Oh. He's pretty good, too. You ought to see Oliver twist.
Hey, Mary, your mother's pretty good. That's a swell gag.
Please read that joke to Jack if he's jerk enough to like it.
Well, maybe I am.
That's all the news. So best regards, and let us hear from you soon. Your loving mother, Charlie.
Charlie?
Her mother wanted a boy, too.
Well, Mary, they can say what they want to about your mother, and most people do. Now, Mary, would you like to help me set the table? I want it to look nice when the Colemans get here.
Sure, Jack, but you know, it's still pretty warm. Why don't you serve dinner out on the patio?
Hey, that's a good idea. Oh, Rochester, we're going to have dinner out on the patio.
Jack, what are you staring at the wall for?
Mary, that echo. You must have heard it.
Jack, if you don't stop imagining things, you'll go crazy.
I'm not imagining things. I heard it. I know I did.
Well, try to get your mind off of it.
Okay, I'll try.
I got the table all set, Mr. Benny, but I'm having a little trouble with the napkins.
With the napkins?
Yeah, I keep folding them into squares, and they keep folding themselves back into triangles.
Well, don't worry about them, and you better check on the dinner.
Okay. Oh, say, by the way, Mr. Wilson came in a while ago. He wants to see you. He's in the library.
Oh, Don Wilson? Oh. Oh, hello, Don.
Well, hello, Jack. The sportsman couldn't come over, so they asked me to talk to you about the commercial for the program.
Oh.
Meanwhile, I've been looking through your scrapbook all about your trip to Europe.
Oh, yes. It's interesting, isn't it, Don?
Certainly is. Gosh, what beautiful pictures.
Yeah. Don, look at this one here, taken in Switzerland. Aren't the mountains beautiful with the snow-capped peaks and waterfalls?
Yes. What do people eat there?
Oh, cheese and hot chocolate and a lot of dairy things. And Don, look at this picture taken in Glasgow, Scotland. The Highlands of Scotland are so picturesque and charming. It's really inspiring.
What do people eat there?
In Scotland? Oh, meat and potatoes, you know, the same as we do. Oh, look here, Don. Here's a picture taken in Amsterdam, Holland. Ah, what a country, Holland, with its canals and dikes and windmills.
What do people eat there?
Well, I don't know. Fish, vegetables, a lot of things.
Hey, Jack, what's this picture down here?
Don, I'm glad you noticed that. That was taken during the war when I was in the South Pacific. That's a little island surrounded by coral reefs with a few palm trees waving in the breeze. And the water is crystal clear and the sand is as white as ivory.
What do people eat there?
Each other. They're cannibals.
Okay, that's the first portion of the Jack Benny program from October 24th, 1948. Jack and all his gang. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. But first, these words. All right, you know what, Lisa? I got to tell you something. I had my Jeep detailed the other day.
I heard that.
By a company called Renewed Rides. And the great thing about Renewed Rides is they come out to you. I mean, how convenient is that, right?
Right.
I had my Jeep done. It was unbelievable. It took like 3.5 hours. It looks amazing. It's
what did you have done to it?
Well, a complete detail inside and out. It looks like it's showroom new. And I like a clean car. I know you're the same way.
No, honestly, what specifically do they do when they detail
everything?
A car?
They wax it. They did the tires. It's just, I mean, I was like, oh my goodness, look at this thing. But the great thing about Renewed Rides is convenience. They come out to you. It's like easy as 1, 2, 3. They'll come out to your, they'll do whatever car you have. And you know what? The great thing is they're lower than most detail shops are that you have to bring your vehicle in where you have to wait for hours. So check them out. They will bring all of their equipment out to you. And they service the McHenry, Lake, Kane, and parts of Cook counties. So if you are in McHenry, Lake, Kane, and parts of Cook County, you can check them out. Visit their website, renewedrides.com. That's Renewed Rides, R-E-N-E-W-E-D, renewedrides.com. They're great. I loved it.
Good.
You know what? With all your cars?
I'll have to check out your car.
Absolutely. You need to. Oh, it's great. Yeah,
I'll look at it.
Check it out.
It's dark, but I will in the light.
All right. When we come back from the news, we will have the conclusion to the Jack Benny program. After that, it is the sealed book. You're going to love it.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Exactly who can I complain to about the rain? There's been
too much rain. Shantae, doesn't he like to complain?
No, I mean,
he does.
I don't complain that much. But
yeah, he does.
It's been the rainiest spring, I think, we've ever had. I can't remember.
But you
remember
know what? My grass and my flowers and plants, they look great.
Yeah, but that's you can't go out because if Lisa goes out in the rain, here's what happens.
I'm melting.
Yeah,
I'm
it's a
melting.
Problem. But it doesn't matter because I have a car service.
I'll get you my pretty.
My car service has an umbrella,
too.
And they walk me all the way to the
true.
Door. So
yeah,
I'm fine.
True. But I'm surprised that you go out in the rain at all with that whole melting thing.
Yeah, it's a risk.
Yeah.
It's a risk I'm willing to take. And just so everybody knows, we'll be here next weekend with the WGN Radio Theater.
Yes.
Although
I will not be here Saturday.
Carl won't be here Saturday, but I will be here on Saturday. So I will helm this ship.
And you know what? You are going to helm the ship,
yes.
Huh? Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to go to New York. I have a wedding that I have to go to. One
All
of
right.
my best friends is getting married.
Well,
so.
I will be here and the show will go without a
I'll
hitch.
Be back for Sunday, though.
It might even be better, I'm just saying.
Yeah, could be. Probably will be.
So,
yeah, I'm going to miss everybody Saturday, but I'll be at a wedding
but
in
we
New York.
But we will still be playing 3 classic radio shows Saturday.
Yes, we will.
And Sunday.
All right. Well, let's get back to the classic radio show of the Jack Benny program.
You know, I can't understand you, Don. I'm showing you such beautiful pictures. All you can think of is food. Look at this one here, the one with the donkey. that was taken in Ireland.
Oh, boy, Ireland. I've always wanted to go there. It must be beautiful country.
Oh, it is, Don, it is. You ought to see Ireland. The River Shannon, the Lakes of Killarney, Limerick, Ballygar, County Sligo. Ah, Ireland. With its magnificent lakes, green fields, winding roads, and simple little cottages. And the people are so gay and happy, they greet you with a smile.
What do people eat there?
Now cut that out!
Look, Don, I haven't got time to talk about it now. You know, Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman are coming over for dinner. Gee, look what time it is. They're probably getting dressed right now. Oh, Benita.
Yes, Ronald?
Benita?
Yes, Ronnie?
Must we go?
I'm afraid we must. It's too late now to get out of it.
Well, I certainly wish we had to. Say, I've got it. Call Jack up and tell him I broke my leg.
Oh, darling, you can't tell him you broke your leg. You told him that the last time, and he found out you didn't.
Well, this time I will break it.
That's not necessary. After all, he's not going to ask you to dance with him.
Well, can't you call him up and say I have a cold? And my doctor doesn't want me to be among crowds?
No, that wouldn't work either. Jack told me this was to be an intimate dinner, and there won't be many people.
Well, not at first. But the place will be jammed when the Greyhound bus stops for sandwiches.
Well, that isn't really so bad normally, but remember the night the sheriff was taking a busload of convicts to San Quentin?
Well, I'll never forget it. You know, it's bad enough going to Benny's house, but the people he surrounds himself with, that Phil Harris fellow, what an atrocious character.
Mr. Harris isn't so bad. He's rather attractive, too. He's got nice hair.
And so's Lassie, and she doesn't drink. Even if she did, she couldn't lap it up as fast as he can.
Oh, Ronnie.
And of all Benny's cast, the most ridiculous is that Dennis Day.
I know, but at least Dennis has an excuse.
Well, what's that?
He's nuts.
Well, he certainly is. And that Don Wilson fellow, you know, I can't understand him at all.
What do you mean?
Well, once I was telling her about Lost Horizon, I gave him the most beautiful description of Shangri-La, and when I finished, he said, what do people eat there?
Well, darling, yes, cheer up. At least Mary Livingston will be there, and she's very nice.
Oh, yes, Mary's lovely. But how Benny could take that girl out of the May Company and drag her down to this, I'll never
know. Oh. Oh. Well, if we're going to go, let's finish dressing. The sooner we get there, the sooner we can leave. I wonder what Jack's serving for dinner.
Oh, probably the same thing as always. Baked beans under glass.
Well, I hope he's more careful with the linen tonight. Last time we had dinner there, I wiped my lips with a napkin and got stuck with a safety pin.
Oh, well, we've stalled all we can. Let's get ready.
Very well. Ronnie.
Yes, darling?
First one dressed is a rotten egg.
Kid.
Jack, aren't you going to fix the light?
Oh, I'm not going to bother with her now. We'll just have to leave the candles. Holy smoke, look how late it is. I wonder what's keeping the Coleman.
Benita, is my tie on straight?
You look very nice.
Thank you.
Oh, Ronnie, I happened to look out of the window and I noticed Jack has candles on the table.
Candles on the table. Well, that's Benny for you. Candle light and seven up. Oh, Benita, I'd give anything if we didn't have to go. Anything.
Oh, darling, what's the difference? It's only one night.
I know, but he's such a bore. Talks about himself all the time. You ever forget that night we ran into him in London?
Why, Jack was only trying to make conversation.
Conversation? Benita, I didn't mind when he told me he broke all existing records at the Palladium. And I didn't mind when he told me that the King and the Queen couldn't get tickets. But when he told me they were going to move his dressing room to number 10 Downing Street, I could have spit in his eye.
Well, darling, you can't blame him for being enthusiastic.
Well, perhaps not, but Benita, his method of advertising his engagement at the Palladium was disgraceful.
Well, it was rather flamboyant.
Flamboyant? Imagine him hiring a skywriter to fly over the House of Parliament, writing, "Laugh till you crack a jolly jack."
I never could understand that P.S. More for your car.
No, neither could I. I tell you, darling, if I have to listen to that stuff again tonight, I shall... Oh, I'll get it. Yes?
I beg your pardon, is this Jack Benny's house?
Well, Jack Benny lives next door.
Next door? But that's a parking lot.
Only the front lawn.
Well, I'm sorry I bothered you, but I gotta deliver this stuff to Mr. Benny. He called up the market and said something went wrong with his oven, and he told me to hurry over with four cans of hash.
Hash?
Come on.
Benita, you hear that? Hash. If Benny thinks I'm going to put on a tuxedo to eat hash with a bunch of convicts, he's got another thing coming.
Bonnie, now don't get so excited. We promised Jack we'd be there and we've got to go. Now, come on.
All right, come on, let's go. Benita, from now on, invitation or no invitation, I swear this is the last time
Bonnie, look out.
Oh.
Bonnie! Oh. Darling, did you hurt yourself?
Why did the gardener leave that flower pot in the middle of... Benita.
Bonnie, what's the matter? Bonnie! What are you laughing at?
Benita, we don't have to go. I broke my leg!
Lord, 6 weeks in the hospital. 6 weeks away from Benny. Darling, put me in a maternity ward. You'll never look for me there.
Good night, folks.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That's the Jack Benny program, a broadcast from October 24th, 1948, with the Colemans as special guests. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Well, you know what, Lisa Wolf?
What, Carl?
Next Sunday. Yes. I'm not here Saturday because I'm in New York, but next
but
Sunday.
But I will be here.
Yes, indeed.
So the show will be great.
Yes, it will be. But next Sunday, we're going to have Dan Jaffe in here along with Dave Weiske, and they're going to be giving away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. Now, Cat's Pride is our main sponsor here on the WGN Radio Theater, and they do all kinds of wonderful things for cats and dogs all across the country and all across the world with this program with the Green Jug. Make sure you switch over to Cat's Pride in the Green Jug. But next week, another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter to one of our lucky listeners. Now, folks, if you are not entered into our drawing, you really should not wait. You should do it right away. If you don't already have a picture of your cat, which probably you do, if you own a cat, you have a picture of your cat,
yes,
right?
Yes, definitely.
You should take a picture if you don't and email it to us here at catspridephoto@gmail.com. Catspridephoto@gmail.com. Make sure you have what? Your name? Your address?
No. Your name, your cat's name, your city, and your state. That's all we need.
You need the address.
Nope.
No, that's right. I guess if you win, we'll get your address.
Yep.
All right.
Send it in. And that will be your chance to win.
Yeah. What happens is we take all of the pictures, we put them in a hat, and Dan or Dave randomly choose. So you could be, I mean, listen, every single month somebody wins. So send in that picture. Make sure you do it right away. Because you want to win a year, so that's a nice prize.
Sure is.
I don't have a cat.
But it would be nice if you did.
But if I had a cat,
then you'd want
I would want that.
Yes, you do.
I would want to win.
I would. I like to win, even if I don't have a cat.
Cats
it would be
cool,
fun
though.
To win.
I like cats. My sister has a cat.
Yeah.
Whenever I go over there, it comes by me.
It likes you?
Yeah. Lets me pet it and stuff. Yeah. Not too smart of a cat, I guess.
No, I was thinking that too.
But that comes right up to me and
it's good.
I pet it. His name is Cody. I pet it all the time.
Good.
And then I leave there and I have hair all over my...
That's what
I have to wash my jacket because there's hair all over it. It's Cody's hair all over it.
I'm kind of a dog girl.
Yeah. I go home and I'm still reminded of Cody because there's hair all over my jacket.
I got a picture of my doggy just tonight. I just showed it to you.
It's a very cute picture.
He's cute.
So do get in your picture, catspridephoto@gmail.com. All right. In our next hour, Lisa, we have the sealed book. This was a really kind of a creepy series, scary series, that was created by the same people that created The Mysterious Traveler and The Strange Dr. Weird. And a lot of times they kind of reuse their stories. They had three shows on the air at the same time. They actually also created, I think they were one of the writers on Murder by Experts and some other things, but The Mysterious Traveler, we haven't played A Mysterious Traveler in a while. I should probably schedule one of those. But the sealed book was Philip Clark. He played the keeper of the book, right? And in which all secrets and mysteries of mankind are told throughout the ages. So this creepy guy would open the book, and then he'd start a story, and then, of course, it would be dramatized, you know.
Yeah, I get it.
It was out of New York. Good series. Jack McGregor was the director. But Robert A. Arthur and David Kogan. And I had the great pleasure of working with David Kogan. He's passed away now. But David Kogan wrote a couple of forewords for some of the products that I put out. I put out a Mysterious Traveler thing, and he did a foreword. And it's so great to talk to the people that actually create these shows, right?
Amazing.
I've been so fortunate to meet so many, like Hyman Brown.
The creators, the writers, the actors.
Richard Crenush, you know, Willard Waterman. Yeah. I mean, just so many of these people. Harry Bartell, he was really great too. Parley Bear.
Yeah.
Howard McNear. So many of these people that that did these radio shows. Of course, there's still some around, you know, like our buddy Peggy Weber. She's still around. There's Tommy Cook, who was in a lot of these shows. He's still around. We had Shirley Mitchell on not too long ago from Our Miss Brooks. So
she's so great.
Unfortunately, most of them are gone.
No,
though.
I know that.
You know, so when we play these shows, most of them are gone.
No,
but we're going to continue playing them as an homage to them and as a lot of entertainment for our listeners. I got to tell you, people love these classic radio shows.
Well, that's why we're here.
Yeah,
if they didn't love them, we wouldn't have a show.
We appreciate WGN management here giving us 6 hours a week to play these shows. Yeah. In our next hour, as I said, sealed book.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Esmeralda. Thank you, Roger Badish. It is hour three. Thank you for staying up late with us, folks. It's 1:07 in the morning, and we have classic radio till 2 a.m., so we're on for about another hour here. We have the sealed book in this hour. Good mystery. You'll want to pull the covers up close and be scared a little. Maybe do as I said last week, light a candle or two, Lisa. Turn all the lights off and light a candle. Lisa was like, oh, you have candles? Yeah, I have candles.
Well, you're not usually the romantic type, so I wasn't sure.
No, I'm not using them for romance.
I thought maybe you would. You're using them for lighting? You have no lights?
No, I have...
To light the way?
When I listen to a scary radio show. I like to put the candle on. It's cool. It just creates the whole mood, you know?
I'm not a candle. I'm not a candle person. I don't like candles.
Why?
Really? You want to know?
Yeah. Candles are cool.
I'm afraid of fire.
Well, oh, okay.
Wow. So I just, they kind of scare me. So yeah. I have electric candles.
You have electric candles?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just turn it on.
That's like,
no, it's kind of nice.
Nah.
And then you turn it off.
No.
And then there's no fire.
That's no good.
I like
that's
them.
No good.
It's good.
Come on. All right, folks. For once, I'm going to win a debate here. Text in 312-981-7200. Real candles,
okay,
or electric
candles.
But wait
candles. A second. In terms of safety, when you've got kids
I'm not talking about
and
safety.
Dogs,
I mean, I'm not talking
who
about safety.
Wants to worry about a candle?
What's better? Just better.
Better for
however
what?
You look at what the word better means.
Safer?
No. Just what's better, real candles or electric candles? 312-981-7200. All right, in this hour, it's a sealed book. But first, we're going to play our game, Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote. What's the movie?
Unforgiven.
Oh, let's just stop right here for a second,
let's
okay?
Just stop
I know every
right here.
Word of this movie,
I
backward
thought you were say
and
that.
Forward.
All
so
right.
I will know this quote for
okay.
sure. I'm going to be 3 for 3 tonight.
All right. Well, we'll see.
Give us a call. We'll take caller 4-312-981-7200. Do they win Twilight Zone CDs?
Yes, they do.
All right. Call us now. Let's play our game live on the air after these words.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
We have Jimmy on the phone. Hi, Jimmy.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Hi, Jimmy.
How you doing, Carl?
I'm good, man.
Good. Glad you made it. Glad you made it through. You ready to?
One thing you have to listen to. You have to listen to Lisa about the candles.
Oh no!
You know what's funny?
Jimmy.
I have a lot of texts that have come in, and I say there are more people that are voting for electric, and people are saying mostly we've got a few who appreciate a real candle,
Jimmy.
But wait a second,
hang
they're
on.
Saying electric because they can fall asleep, not have to worry about the house catching on fire. There's kids, there's dogs, and you know what? It's just safer.
Jimmy, you're in your bedroom. You're listening to a classic radio show, and you maybe have some company. Got a little wine going on there.
Electric.
Fireplace.
Just flip it on.
And you got the. You're gonna have a fake candle. You're gonna have a real candle.
It's not a fake candle.
I listen.
To Jimmy.
Listen to Jimmy.
I have a gas fireplace, and the electric candles are fine.
I have a gas fireplace and electric candles are fine. We are on the
Jimmy,
same page.
Jimmy, we're not going to agree on this one, buddy.
We are on the same page.
But I like you. I can tell I like Jimmy. Even okay. though he likes electric candles, I still like Jimmy.
Well, you like me and I like electric candles.
All right, well, we're going to get this right.
All right, let's
Unforgiven.
Do this. All right, number one, you don't deserve my tears. Number two, I don't deserve this to die like this. Number three, I deserve pain. I deserve to die.
Okay, I know what it is, by the way.
Okay, just a moment.
But let's see what Jimmy says.
Okay.
I don't want to go with number two.
He's right.
I don't deserve this
Hang
to
on.
Die
I'm
like
this.
I'm
going to do this now.
He's already dinging the bell.
Because we don't even need to hear it.
Well, then I just did too much work.
I told
work
you,
then.
I know every
I'm gonna
word
have,
of
You
this
know what
movie.
I'm going to do? I'm going to stop sending the movie clips because we
All
don't
right,
need
Shante,
them. We just
play,
need Carl.
Play number two, please.
I don't deserve this to die like this.
She's got it. I don't think I need to send you the clips
Jimmy,
anymore.
How many times have you seen Unforgiven?
Probably about 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, it's the kind of movie that you can just watch over and over and over again, and I have.
I know you have. You mentioned that
Godfather.
A few times.
It is. It's like The Godfather, exactly.
Exactly.
But you are a winner. Not Carl, but Jimmy's the winner, and you've got
yep.
it. You're going to send you a Twilight Zone 4 CD set. So thank you so much for playing.
All right, buddy. Thanks
right.
a lot.
Take care.
Appreciate you, Jimmy. All right, man. So he's a big winner, won some Twilight Zone, and he has seen Unforgiven a bunch of times.
Yes.
What a movie. When's the last time you saw the movie, Lisa?
Oh, forever ago.
Have you seen it?
I did, but,
okay.
you know, back
right.
greatest, in the 90s.
In my opinion, greatest Western ever made. Greatest Western ever made. And I'm not a big Western guy.
No, me neither.
But
not a
that
Western guy.
Movie is unbelievable. All right, time for the sealed book. This was a creepy series, and it was created by Robert A. Arthur and David Kogan, as I said, the same guys who created The Mysterious Traveler. and The Strange Doctor Weird. It came to radio only for one season in 1945, produced and directed by Jock McGregor. It was heard on Mutual. Philip Clark was the mysterious silent keeper of the book in which is recorded all the secrets and mysteries of mankind throughout the ages. Fun show. Let's tune this in. Get your real candles out, light them, and listen to The Ghost Makers from June 10th, 1945. Here's part one of The Sealed Book.
The Sealed Book. Once again, the keeper of the book has opened the ponderous door to the secret vault, wherein is kept the great sealed book, in which is recorded all the secrets and mysteries of mankind through the ages. Here are tales of every kind, tales of murder, of madness, of dark deeds, strange and terrible beyond all belief. Keeper of the book, I would know what tale we tell this time. Open the great book and let us read. Slowly, the great book opens. One by one, the keeper of the book turns the pages and stops. Ah, the strange story of two scoundrels who would stop at nothing for money. A tale called The Ghost Makers. Here is the tale, The Ghost Makers, as it is written in the pages of the sealed book. It is an autumn afternoon in the ancient New England village of Wilton. In an old stone house a mile from the town, Agatha Wainwright is serving tea to her nephew Ned, and a little man Ned has introduced as Professor Piedmont, a friend who has come to spend a few weeks with them while he works on a book to be called Old Graveyards of New England.
So this is your graveyard, friend Ned. He looks like a man who'd be happy staring at tombstones.
They make a fascinating study, Miss Wainwright.
Well, I'll take your word for it, Professor Piedmont. Myself, I'd rather read about them in a book.
The professor not only writes books, Auntie, but he's also an expert on psychic phenomena.
Psychic phenomena, eh? Oh, you mean ghosts. Foolish fiddle-faddle, dreamed up by silly people without the brains to know better.
Ah, but Miss Wainwright, I assure you, you are wrong.
Oh, nonsense. When a person's dead, he's dead. When I see anything I'm willing to call a ghost, I'll know I'm crazy and I'll admit it.
Why, Auntie, this very house is supposed to be haunted. You know that.
Rubbish. This is a perfectly normal house. I've lived here a month and I haven't heard so much as a board squeak.
Ah, but Miss Wainwright, that may be only because you're new to the house and not yet sensitized. It takes time to become aware of occult influences.
Oh, stuff and nonsense. Who started all this talk about ghosts, anyway? Here, now let's have some tea, and no more talk about ghosts.
Well, Ned, now that we're alone, suppose you tell me a little more than you put in your letter. I'm still not sure why you sent for me.
All right, Professor. This is the gist of it. 3 months ago, Aunt Agatha's brother died, leaving her an estate of $400,000. And I'm Auntie's only living relative.
I see. Yes, light begins to dawn.
No, wait. My uncle arranged his will so that Aunt Agatha gets only the interest, about $20,000 a year, and this house to live in. On her death, the entire estate goes to charity. I'm cut off without a penny.
I see your uncle didn't like you, Ned. A shrewd man. Very shrewd.
Yes, he was making sure I couldn't get my hands on any of it. But that's where you come in. If Aunt Agatha were to become, shall we say, ill, mentally ill.
So that she was incompetent to administer the estate, you mean?
Exactly. If Aunt Agatha were to lose her mind through shock or fright, who but me, her only relative, would be the logical one to administer the estate for her?
You would, then. Then you'd have the whole income for as long as she lived.
Yes, and part of the principal, too. I know ways to manage it. But I've got to get my hands on some of it before the end of the year. I'm sunk. I owe a little money, about $25,000. If I don't get it quickly, well, the people I owe it to are rather short-tempered.
I understand. Yes, Ned, I remember when I knew you in Chicago. You liked to gamble, didn't you? But that's your affair. Personally, I prefer to stick to my own profession, creating ghosts.
Yes, I've heard of some of your jobs, Professor, and some of the ghosts you've created to order.
Yes, I pride myself on having a unique occupation, Ned. I believe I'm the only ghost maker there is. And the ghosts I've created have been effective, too.
So I understand. Now, what I want you to do is this. I want Auntie frightened to the point
where... Yes, I understand. Well, Ned, it's going to be difficult. She's a tough-minded woman. Hard to scare. Hard to drive insane.
That's got to be done. Got to get my hands on the estate. If you succeed, Professor, there's $5,000 in it for you.
Hmm? All right, Ned. I'll try. It won't be easy. But she may crack suddenly when the time comes. That type does, you know.
Good. Settle then. You brought everything you're apt to need?
All my apparatus and gadgets are in my trunk. They'll be here tomorrow. I'm not altogether sure I like this job, Ned.
I hope you're not going to turn moral on me, Professor.
No. There's something about this place that disturbs me, though. You know, I am psychic at times. Not altogether a faker.
Next, you'll be scaring yourself with your own stories.
As we were driving past that old cemetery this afternoon, I suddenly felt a premonition, a chill. The kind of chill you're supposed to feel when you go near the place you'll someday be buried.
Oh, it was just the wind. We'll have to get you some red flannels. Here. Here's something that'll give you your courage back. Drink it down.
Yeah, that does me good. All the different kinds of spirits. I prefer those in bottles.
I thought you'd like it. Now let's go downstairs again. We won't talk about ghosts anymore tonight. But tomorrow night, who knows what may come knocking at Aunt Agatha's door.
The following evening, Ned and the professor joined Aunt Agatha by the fireplace, where she sat knitting. Outside, a cold winter wind blew.
Oh, listen to that wind. We may be in for a storm.
We're in for an early winter, that's what. First snow will fall any day now.
It's good to have a fireplace to sit by when the wind blows like that.
Here's the cider and donuts, ma'am.
Very well, Emmy. Bring it right in.
Ah, cider and donuts. Just what we need on a night like this.
Will you have a glass, Mr. Ned?
Oh, yes, thank you, Emmy.
Will you have some cider, Professor Peed, Mom?
Professor, Emmy's trying to give you some cider.
Excuse me, I was listening. Thought I heard someone knocking on the front door.
Someone knocking?
Well, there is someone there.
Well, they can't be very anxious to get in, if that's all the noise they can make.
Shall I go see who it is, Miss Agatha?
Yes, girl, go see, though I can't imagine who'd be calling at this hour of the night.
Sounded like someone who didn't expect to get in anyway. A timid child, or maybe a ghost.
Yes? Yes, who is it? Why? Miss Agatha!
Well?
There wasn't anyone there.
No one there? Of course there was. Someone knocked, didn't they?
But I opened the door and there wasn't anyone there.
Then who was knocking? Answer me that.
I don't know. But it wasn't anyone you can see.
Emmy, I'll stand for no foolishness now.
No, ma'am. But just the same, there's nobody at the door.
Someone's playing tricks on us, and I'm going to see who it is.
I'll come with you.
You won't find anybody there.
Well, we'll see. Al, what is it? What do you...
There isn't anyone here.
No, but there was. They slipped away into the bushes. That's what they did.
Yes, yes, of course. Some small boys playing tricks, I suppose.
If I catch them, I'll tan their hides.
Who was it, Miss Wainwright?
Just some boys playing tricks, Professor. That's all it could have been. Come on, Professor. Drink your cider.
What? Oh, yes, yes. Good.
Professor, you look like a man who was listening to something then. What was it?
Oh, no, no, I assure you.
I'm too old not to know when a man is lying, Professor Piedmont. What were you listening to?
To tell the truth, I thought I heard voices.
What kind of voices?
Far away voices, crying something I couldn't make out. I bet it was just the flames in the fireplace. I'm sure it was.
Of course, that's all it was. Well, what do you say we all turn in? This New England air makes me sleepy.
Knocks at the door when there's nobody there. Voices. Yes, it's high time we were all in bed instead of sitting around here imagining such nonsensical things.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Don't let that candle burn out now. Make sure you keep that candle going.
If it tips over, the whole house is going to burn down.
No, we don't want that. You got to keep an eye on a candle.
That's what I'm saying. Well, see, that's the problem.
You don't light a candle and then just leave it alone. You keep an eye on it.
But what if you kind of doze off in your bed?
Well, it's usually in like a candle holder thing.
It still doesn't seem safe. And I don't like scents either. I don't like scented things.
Are you like Frankenstein's monster? He didn't like fire either. Fire.
Yeah.
Not good.
Not good. That's right. Not good. And I don't
That's how you are, right?
And I don't like those funny scented things and the whole room stinks.
Yeah, no, I don't like that either.
You know what I mean?
Talking about an incense?
Well, I'm talking about candles. They have scents oftentimes, most of the time.
No, usually they're dollars. It costs more than just cents.
No, you can
buy them.
It costs cents. They usually have scents.
All right, well, we're listening to The Sealed, but you make no sense.
You're nonsensical.
Sealed book, The Ghost Makers. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes, but first, these words. Man, those Victory Auto Wreckers radio ads and TV ads.
Yeah.
They've been around since I was a kid.
I remember the TV ads.
Yeah.
They're classic.
They're still on. It's the same commercial.
I know where the door falls off.
Yeah, and it's like from the 60s.
70s. I remember it from the 70s.
I remember racing home to watch Batman in the 60s.
Yeah, I used to watch it too.
And I'm pretty positive on Channel 9,
yeah,
they had the Victory Auto Wreckers TV ads.
I know. And they were so stupid, they're great.
And I think Rick Kogan did the voice on the TV ads as well as the radio ads.
That's so funny.
Gosh, what was he, 11 when he did them?
I don't know.
Maybe 12?
I don't know.
He probably had a deep voice even when he was 12.
I think he was born with it. It's a gift.
Some people just have a deep voice.
Yours is very deep.
I know.
It's really deep.
Thanks. Keep saying that, Lisa.
No.
All right. So we got news here, right?
Yeah.
We got news. We come back from the news. We're going to have the conclusion to the sealed book. Don't let those candles
Somebody just texted me. Why don't they just...
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
1:35 in the morning. If you're up listening to us, thank you. We're up. Lisa has not dozed off. I've heard no snoring tonight. Congratulations, Lisa.
Well, it's too bad I can't say the same about you, Carl.
I've heard no snoring from her the entire night. She's had a lot of texts coming in. That's why.
Yeah.
So where are we on this fake candle, real candle?
We've
moved on. Much more real candles, though, right?
Nope, not true at all. Mm-hmm. I would have to say
she's in control of it, so she can say whatever she wants.
No, I'm reading all the texts. You want me to count them for you?
No,
I'm sure
it's more real. People
there are plenty of people that said real, but I will tell you,
listen,
that of the people that texted in, more than half sided with me.
Nah.
Yeah, I promise you.
I'm telling
you. On the texting line.
The people out there listening know that, you know, not... Let me say this. Okay?
They're into safety, Carl.
Usually. I'm going to give you this now, Lisa. I'm giving you something here.
Usually I'm right.
Usually you are right. You are right.
This is not a right or wrong. This is an opinion.
I mean, you just recently got out of college. I mean, you've been in college your whole life.
Yeah, just recently.
You're 50-something years old.
Just recently.
And she just recently got out of college. You have like 12, 13 master's degrees.
Something
so
like
I don't
that.
Want to go up against you.
Let me
you.
Explain something that you don't understand. Okay?
Yes, ma'am.
There's right and wrong.
Yes,
neither
ma'am.
Of which apply to this particular situation.
No. I disagree.
No, Carl.
And that is that.
This is not a right or wrong. This is just what you like
candles,
or don't like.
Real candles.
This is just your preference.
Much better.
Okay, that's a preference, not a right or wrong, just so we're clear.
Okay.
Okay. All right. All right, we'll just
argue. We're listening to The Ghost Makers. This stars Philip Clark. And, you know, this originally ran right here on this radio station back in 1945. So it aired on the Mutual Network June 10th, 1945, but it aired on WGN, you know, in syndication, on WGN Chicago on August 12th, 1945, this very episode. And here we are airing it again just a couple of years later.
Yeah, on WGN.
Just a couple of years later. Yeah. Let's get back now to the Ghostmakers on the sealed book.
Highly pleased with their first effort in creating ghosts that didn't exist, Ned and Professor Piedmont went to bed. But before they retired, they held a brief, low-voiced conference in Ned's room.
Well, Professor, that door-knocking act was all right. You did it very nicely.
Yes, Ned. Ordinary lengths of black thread run through a crack in the window sash and attach to the door-knocker can create a very satisfactory ghost indeed.
Now tell me, what comes next on the program?
Well, we can't work too fast. Tomorrow, the hired girl, Emmy, will spread the story of tonight's happenings. The whole town will start talking about it.
Good. And then?
And tomorrow night, nothing happens. Aunt Emmy is reassured. But tomorrow, I'll be busy. I noticed today there's an old hollow tree in the woods about 100 feet from the house.
Mm, what about it?
I'll run wires to it, hiding them under the leaves, and install a small loudspeaker in it. I'll conceal the microphone and batteries behind the drapes in the living room.
I see. So 2 nights from now, we'll hear ghostly voices, eh?
Exactly. They'll accompany the ghostly knocks on the door. But that won't be all. There'll be other surprises on the program.
Professor, remind me to tell you sometime that you're about as unpleasant an old rascal as I've ever met.
The next evening, Agatha Wainwright listened nervously for a repetition of the ghostly knocks. But nothing happened, and she regained her composure. The evening following that, however, as she and Ned and the professor sat in the living room around the fire...
9 o'clock. The evening may just be starting in New York, but here in Wilton, it's bedtime. Seems to be someone at the door.
So there is.
Shall I go?
No, Emmy can answer the door. She does little enough to earn her money. Emmy? Emmy?
Yes, Miss Agatha?
There's someone at the door. See who it is, please.
I... Must I, Miss Agatha?
Must you, indeed. Answer the door, Emmy.
I'd rather not, ma'am.
Emmy, see who is at the door.
Yes, Miss Agatha. I'm going. Who is it? There's no one there. There's no one there again.
Emmy, get control of yourself.
But I tell you, there's no one there.
Then it's someone playing tricks. That's all you hear, Emmy.
Yes. Yes, Miss Agatha, I hear. But I don't believe it.
Go to your room.
Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry, Miss Agatha. But there wasn't anyone there.
I hope I'm not going to have to discharge that girl.
Shall I go this time, Auntie?
No, Ned. If the rascals play their tricks, whoever they are, they'll soon stop when they see we pay no attention.
I wonder if I could see them from the window.
Maybe we could trap them if we were to go quietly out the back door and slip around to the front.
What was that? Someone calling.
Really? I don't hear anyone.
It's someone calling to us to let him in.
Strange. I can't hear it.
Oh, you must have heard it, Ned. It was perfectly plain.
Some voices certain people can hear and others can't. If there's someone calling, we better take a look.
Come on, Addie. We'll see what goes on. Who's there? Show yourself, whoever you are.
Yeah, it's perfectly empty.
No. There isn't a soul in sight.
Both the knocking and the voices seem to have stopped.
Perhaps we ought to search the yard and... And Agatha, look. Huh? Down at the edge of the trees.
Lights. 3 balls of light moving around just above the ground.
Really? 3 spheres of light? Dear me, luminous spheres are common manifestations of spiritual presences.
Oh, nonsense. They're just will-o'-the-wisps, that's all.
Whatever they are, we're going to see. Come on, Professor. If it's a trick, we'll soon know.
Yes, Ned. Wait for me. Don't scare them away. I want to see what they look like.
Ned, they're rising. They're floating away, but the trees...
Aunt Agatha, Annie, are you all right? Shall I get a doctor for you?
I want with a doctor? I'm all right. I'm an old fool carrying on like that. Just because of some will-o'-the-wisps or whatever it was. I shan't do it again, I promise you.
You need not be ashamed, Miss Wainwright. Unless I'm much mistaken, we've witnessed a psychic visitation of a kind unsurpassed in my experience.
No stuff and nonsense, Professor. You may believe in spirits, but I don't. I never have believed in ghosts, and I'm not going to start now. It was just that it was, well, unexpected.
In the days that followed, Ned Wainwright and Professor Piedmont found it impossible to shake Agatha Wainwright's iron nerves. Emmy, the hired girl, resigned in terror. But Agatha remained seemingly unmoved. Resolutely, she ignored the ghostly knocks, voices, and footsteps that Professor Piedmont's ingenuity devised. The whole town buzzed with tales of her haunted house, but she refused to pay any attention to them. After a month had gone by, Ned was ready to admit defeat.
Well, Professor, you're a washout. And Agatha hasn't turned a hair at your ghost.
No, Ned, I told you it might take a long time. She's a very strong-minded woman. Believe me, anyone else would have cracked by now.
Well, she hasn't, and she's not going to.
I still say it may happen all at once. She's nervous and distraught. She doesn't sleep well. Every evening she sits listening for ghostly voices, though she won't admit it. She's made up her mind not to believe in ghosts, and I'm afraid she never will.
Well, what do you suggest? It's the middle of December. I've got to get my hands on her money by the end of the year, and I'm sunk.
We must play our last card. You.
Me? What do you mean?
She's fond of you. You're her only relative.
What are you getting at?
How would she feel if you, her only relative, were to die and come back here as a ghost?
I don't follow you.
My plan is simple. We'll say goodbye to your aunt and drive off as if we were going away. Then, secretly in the night, we'll return to the house.
Yes? And then what?
We'll see to it that she receives a phone call from a friend of mine in Boston. He'll announce to your aunt that you and I have been in an automobile accident, that we've been killed.
Oh, I see. Yes, I begin to understand.
Immediately after the phone call, we'll knock. She'll come to the door and see us standing there.
And having just heard that we're both dead...
Exactly. If that doesn't work, Ned, we are defeated. But it'll be a strong mind indeed that can withstand such a shock. A strong mind indeed.
Days later, Ned and Professor Piedmont said goodbye to Agatha and drove away. It was starting to snow as they left, so they made their way by a roundabout route to an isolated roadhouse, and there they spent the day waiting. After darkness had fallen, they started back towards Aunt Agatha's house. By now, there was snow feet deep on the road. The cold blast of the north wind made even the heated interior of the car uncomfortable.
Oh, I'll be glad when this is over, Ned. At the moment, it must be down to zero.
Yes, at least. Well, we're almost there. We'll drive up to within 100 yards of the house and wait in the car with the heater on. What time did you arrange to have that phone call made from Boston?
At 9 o'clock, exactly. We want to knock the instant after she gets it.
Right. Isn't that our turn there?
I think so. The snow makes it so hard to see that...
Professor, look out. We're going off the road.
Ned, are you hurt?
My ankle. Help me out of here.
Come on. Hurry, Ned, I smell gasoline. The car may catch on fire.
All right. Help me out of the road.
Yes.
What happened?
We skidded down a 10-foot bank and turned completely over.
If you'd watched where you were going, it wouldn't have happened.
I couldn't tell. There was ice under the snow. No, but never mind that. We've got to get to shelter.
And I think my ankle's broken. Yes, I can't step on it.
Yes. You can lean on me. Where are we?
Quarter of a mile from Aunt Agatha's. There isn't another house within a mile.
Then come on, we've got to get there quick. Lean on me. Help all you can. If we don't get there soon, we'll freeze to death.
Half an hour later, numb with cold and scarcely able to struggle on, Ned and Professor Piedmont staggered up to Agatha Wainwright's house. The windows all had heavy wooden shutters over them, shutters they themselves had helped Agatha put in place to keep out anything that might come knocking at the door in the night. But through the small pane of glass in the front door, light showed as they stumbled thankfully up the steps.
Kevin, we're here. We couldn't have gone another 100 yards.
Oh, nor I. I'm almost frozen. We've got to get inside.
Yes. Here, help me.
All right. One more step. There. Ned, the phone call from Boston. What time is it now?
Time? Like, it's 9. 9 o'clock exactly.
Then knock quickly. We've got to get inside before that phone call comes.
Inside, Agatha Wainwright heard the knocking. But before she could go to the door, the telephone rang and she answered it first.
Hello? Yes, this is Wilton 317. Boston calling long distance? Yes, I'll hold on. Just a minute. Hello? Yes, this is Miss Wainwright speaking. The Boston General Hospital. My nephew Ned. What is it? What's happened to him? Dead. An automobile accident. Both of them killed? No? Oh, no. Yes. Yes, I'm all right. Thank you for letting me know. I'll come in the morning. Ned killed. Oh, no. No, no, he can't be.
It's Ned. Let me in.
Ned. Ned's dead. He's been killed.
Let me in, please,
Agatha.
Ned, let me in.
No, Ned's dead.
Let us in.
No, you can't be Ned. Ned was killed. He's dead.
Aunt Agatha, please.
It must be Ned's ghost. The professor was right. There are ghosts. It's Ned's ghost out there.
Aunt Agatha, we're freezing to death out here. Please,
let us in. No, you can't come in. You're a ghost. You're Ned's ghost. You can't come in. I won't let a ghost in here. I won't.
The next morning, Ned and Professor Piedmont were found frozen to death beside the house. Now, they made a vain effort to pry open the heavy wooden shutters that covered the window. You see, Agatha never did let them in. She knew better than to open the door to ghosts. And now, keeper of the book, before you close the great book, show us the tale we tell next time. This one? Ah, yes. Why, this is amazing. It's a tale of murder. Queer, unexpected, fiendish murder. Murder of a very different and unusual kind. A tale such as you've never heard before. Be sure to be with us again next time when the sound of the great gong heralds another strange and exciting tale from The Sealed Book. The Sealed Book, written by Bob Arthur and David Cogan, is produced and directed by Jock McGregor.
Okay, now you can blow out those candles.
Right.
So you're safe.
Make sure they're scented.
Hang on a second. I just blew mine out there.
Hey, would you not blow on me,
the
please?
Ghost Makers with Philip Clark. From, I had a breath mint earlier, June 10th, 1945. I brush my teeth more than you do.
No, you do
Yes,
not.
I do. The sealed book.